You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudet. The U.S. House of Representatives on Wednesday voted for historic second impeachment of President Trump, approving a single article citing his role in whipping up a mob that stormed the U.S. Capitol in an attempted coup last week. Now, in that article, there is just one charge, as we mentioned, incitement of insurrection, saying the president is guilty of, quote, inciting violence against the government of the United States, unquote. And it is fair to state that this impeachment took place with extraordinary speed, and it is frankly testing the boundaries of the process itself and raising questions that have never been contemplated before. So joining us to talk more in depth about this are Professor Shakira Sanders with the University of Idaho School of Law and Charles Hunt, political science professor at Boise State University. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you, Gemma. Great to be with you.
Thank you for having me.
Shakira, I'd like to start with you. As we know, impeachment is one of the weightiest tools that the Constitution gives Congress to hold government officials, including the president, as we know, accountable for misconduct or abuse of power. So can you quickly walk us through the impeachment process? Because yesterday, we really just saw the first part of it.
Exactly. And so some of your listeners may remember that just a short 2 years ago, we were at this same point. The president had been impeached in the House of Representatives, and those articles of impeachment were then transmitted to the Senate for a trial on conviction. Of course, in 2019, the Senate found the president not guilty of the charges there. Here, we have a slightly different situation because of the very recent election that President Trump lost, but yet he is still officially impeached. It is unclear whether he will be convicted in the Senate, either via a trial or no trial, or a trial that ends up being ineffective.
And also, we should note that in the House of Representatives, it's a simple majority vote for impeachment. But in the Senate, Shakira, it's a bit different, right? I mean, they really do act kind of like a jury, correct? But it's not just not the majority, like a simple majority.
Well, the language is pretty interesting. It says 2/3 of the members present. And so if it's all 100 senators, then that generally means 67. It remains to be seen whether all senators will be at that proceeding, therefore possibly meaning a lower number needed to convict.
So, Charles, President Trump is the first president to be impeached by the House twice. I'm curious about what this does to his legacy. Now, assuming the Senate does not convict him, will he be permanently scarred by these two impeachments in the House, or could he bounce back from something like this? Because he often seems to.
Well, it's a great question, Gemma. If he is actually convicted by the Senate, which I admit seems unlikely, but is not impossible, a number of Republican senators have indicated that they would be open to it, or at least have said the president is potentially criminally liable. Including some unlikely senators like Mike Rounds, the Republican. If he is convicted, there is an option for a subsequent vote by the Senate to bar him from running for president ever again. So sort of regardless of whatever impact it has on his legacy, it's possible it will prevent him from ever being president or holding elected office in this country ever again. And that's a really interesting kind of political question for Republicans.
So, Shakira, let's go back to the charge for this impeachment. The president was charged with inciting insurrection. How does our Constitution define that?
Well, I've actually taken a little bit of time to look this up since we've last talked. And I can tell you that there is no official definition for the term insurrection, nor could I find a specific definition for the term rebellion. I did see that in Article 3, Clause Section 3, there is a term for treason, and that appears to be limited to levying war against the United States. Of course, the president was not impeached for treason.
So then, Charlie, we know that 10 Republicans crossed party lines to join Democrats in the House voting to impeach Trump on Wednesday. Well, when he was impeached before, not one Republican crossed party lines. So how significant was this from a historical standpoint, but also politically?
So from a historical standpoint, it's pretty significant that, you know, 10 Republicans out of, you know, nearly 200 in their caucus in the House may not sound like a lot. And in some cases, given the severity of what happened, it may not sound like a lot to a lot of folks, but it's in a lot of ways, by many measures, the most bipartisan impeachment in American history. So when President Clinton was impeached back in 1998, only five Democrats in the House crossed party lines to agree to impeach him. When President Andrew Johnson was impeached back in the 1800s, I believe only two Democrats crossed party lines to do it then. And as we know, no Republicans did it in the House in 2019 when Trump was first impeached. And so 10 historically is a lot. And then politically, you know, I think it's interesting because it wasn't just sort of self-described moderates. You know, folks like Adam Kinzinger of Illinois certainly would fall into that category, but Liz Cheney of Wyoming, who is the Republican Party caucus chair in the House, also voted to impeach. I think that was a very significant sort of show of force from the leadership. But of course, now it's leading to all kinds of internal divisions within the Republican Party. You know, a lot of members are talking about stripping her of her leadership title. So it'll be an interesting political sort of fight within the Republican Party going forward.
And I want to dig a little bit deeper into that in a moment, Charles. But first, Shakira, we mentioned the 14th Amendment, and this is where it's Article 3, where you take a vote and you can invoke Article 3 of the 14th Amendment, which in layman's terms means that you cannot hold federal office again. This was put in place after the Civil War, basically when, for one example, was when Jefferson Davis, who was the president of the Confederacy, he was tried for treason, he was convicted. They put in the 14th Amendment so that he could not ever hold federal office again. With that said, we've not ever used this part of that amendment since then, at least for a president. Does he have to be convicted of impeachment in order to put this into effect?
So let me clarify a little bit here for your listeners. So the process of impeaching a president is found actually in the congressional powers of Article 1. Which says the House of Representatives tries the president, right? And it's the Senate that convicts. And then, as Dr. Hunt was just describing, as part of the Senate's process, they can choose to convict and remove, and they can choose to convict, remove, and prevent the president from ever serving office again. In the 14th Amendment, there is a process for removing senators and House of Representative members in Congress if they engage in insurrection. The 14th Amendment also gives Congress the power to pass legislation to prevent insurrections. And we do have a federal statute that does prohibit insurrections.
Which is good to know. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with Dr. Charles Hunt, political science professor with Boise State University, and constitutional law professor Shakira Sanders with the University of Idaho, in just a moment to dig deeper into this. More Idaho Matters next. Continuing our conversation now with Professor Shakira Sanders with the University of Idaho Law School and Charles Hunt, political science professor at Boise State University. So, Charles, there was reporting yesterday by national outlets, including CNN, that more Republican House members wanted to vote to impeach, but they did not do so because they, and this is a quote, legitimately fear for their lives and their family lives, unquote. What do you make of this, and should that have influenced their vote?
It's obviously an incredibly troubling quote and something that's troubling to think is even on the minds of these people. But I think it's important to remember that this only happened a week ago. All of these members of Congress were there in the chambers. They were forced to evacuate and go to a safe room with, you know, a lot of their colleagues. And it's worth noting, too, that a number of members of Congress or spouses of members of Congress have gotten sick with COVID since then because they were, you know, quarantined literally with other members, many of whom were not wearing masks. And so I think it sort of underscores the, you know, I have to imagine very traumatizing ordeal that they went through. And a lot of these members of Congress, including a lot of Republicans, have received death threats, have received a number of other kinds of threats. I mean, the crowd of insurrectionists in the Capitol and outside the Capitol were chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." You know, these are not people who are just looking for Democrats. They're looking for Republicans, too. And so it is difficult for me to blame them for feeling that way. Should it be a reason not to vote for impeachment? You know, I'm not a member of Congress, but, you know, right. If you fear for your life, that's a very sort of new thing, at least for many members of Congress in American politics.
And Shakira, I mean, here, if there is a trial, it will happen after President Trump is out of office. We know that the earliest it will happen is January 19th. So one day before he leaves office. And then so not only would we be seeing an impeachment trial of a president that's not in office anymore, then there is also no precedent for disqualifying a president from future office. So do you think either of these issues could end up before the U.S. Supreme Court?
Well, I think that there are a number of scenarios where we could find ourselves in front of the court, and I'll try to avoid any far-fetched scenarios.
Okay.
I think the more likely, if the Senate chooses to go forward with a conviction after the inauguration, and they indeed convict, and if Donald Trump attempts to run for president again, then I suspect we would have litigation because he does not appear to me to be the type of individual who would just accept someone telling them they could not run for president again. And the Constitution does not make clear that in the case of the president, you actually can convict after they leave office. Although I think that there are some arguments to consider here that the president has been impeached and there just simply is not time to have the Senate hearing.
Charlie, if the Senate does take up the impeachment case, what do you think Senators Mike Crapo and Jim Risch will do? Because so far, neither of them have shown any interest in voting in favor of convicting Trump. But could that change as we learn more information from the FBI and the Department of Justice about how this insurrection came to be and if the Trump administration or anyone inside the Capitol building had anything to do with this? I mean, we know that the FBI has come out and said that there is closed circuit video that they are not releasing. And the quote is, "It is worse than you could expect."
Yeah, Gemma, I think that's a great point. I mean, as far as Senators Risch and Crapo, I think, without the caveat that you just stated, I would not pin them as the most likely to flip on the president. It looks like Professor Sanders was saying earlier, assuming everyone is in the chamber, right, they'll need 17 mm-hmm. Republicans. They would not necessarily be on my list of 17 most likely Republicans to flip, certainly not ahead of folks like Mitt Romney or Lisa Murkowski or even Mitch McConnell. But I think you make a great point that a lot of, you know, there's sort of, again, this only happened a week ago. There's a sort of trickle of information that's coming out, including some sort of mixed reports about potentially, you know, members of Congress of the Republican caucus who were perhaps showing around some of these folks, you know, a couple of days before, calling it things like, you know, reconnaissance within the Capitol. And if these kinds of things come out and it turns out that there was much more direct linkage between the administration and the leaders of this insurrection, rather than just simply, you know, the President Trump's words at the rally or saying, you know, go fight for me, if it's much more explicit linkage between either him or other folks in the administration, it doesn't seem impossible that folks like, you know, Senators Crapo or Rich might really start to reconsider when it becomes a political liability for them not to do anything. Mm. But again, remember, this is Idaho, and
right.
the amount that would have to come out for you know, a broad swath of Republican voters in Idaho to turn on President Trump, even once he's out of office, I think is pretty substantial. So I wouldn't put my money on it.
So Shakira, some of the backlash to this impeachment from certain GOP members was that A, this happened so quickly, and B, there were no witnesses or anything like that, which is normally how an impeachment process would work. However, from a standpoint of you know, the constitutionality of that, the witnesses were congressional members. I mean, the people that were on the floor of the House of Representatives yesterday were witnesses to what happened. So can that play into the fact that there were witnesses? They did talk to witnesses.
Well, one, I think you took the words literally right out of my mouth, so thank you. But I think it's a little odd that these sound like some of the same people who did not complain that there were no witnesses for the impeachment trial several years ago. And let's remember, it is the Senate that tries, that puts the evidence to the test and makes the determination. We should also remember that there are no official rules governing this. This is up to the House to decide. They have the autonomy and authority to do it in the same way that Mitch McConnell had the autonomy and authority not to hear any evidence in the Senate. So in this situation, I don't think that there is any basis to argue that there weren't witnesses. One, because there were witnesses, but also the witnesses were the triers, which, yes, is not like our normal court system, but again, this is not the normal system. I think it's also important to remember that to the extent that there is evidence and that evidence is revealed, that there was some type of aid or support from members of Congress, they too could be at risk for removal. So for now, it may be that we're in the political posturing stage because not everyone has all of the information. I would suspect that we will be hearing about this and this investigation will be going on for the next several years. I don't know if everyone has a good idea of the magnitude of this investigation. I can only assume the magnitude of it, having clerked in federal court, district and circuit court. I can imagine that this won't be going on for the next 2 to 3 years if we're lucky.
I want to thank both of you for your insight into this and for more understanding for all of us. So thank you so much. We've been talking with University of Idaho Law Professor Shakira Sanders and Political Science Professor Charles Hunt from Boise State University. Appreciate both of your time.
Thanks, Gemma.
Stay healthy and safe, everybody.
You too. And I want to thank all of you for being a part of Idaho Matters. We do appreciate you joining us every day for being a part of this conversation. Our producers are Frankie Barnhill and Samantha Wright. I'm Gemma Gaudet. It is a beautiful Thursday. I hope you can enjoy some of it and find a little bit of joy in your day. We'll see you back here tomorrow.